Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing.
Today, we're excited to welcome certified coach Corby Fine. Corby is passionate about helping individuals navigate the complexities of their career growth and achieve their professional goals. With over 20 years of experience in growth, digital marketing, and customer experience, he brings a unique blend of strategic and results-oriented leadership to his coaching practice.
Corby's mission is to leverage his extensive experience in digital marketing and customer experience to create value for customers, stakeholders, and society. He also plays the drums and loves to challenge all the rules to drive innovation and is a lover of funky socks.
Welcome, Corby.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here. And as I look at my feet, kind of boring today, actually.
Oh, amazing. I didn't know that about the socks. I'm not sure how I missed that. All right. So, Corby, I'll start off because we worked together a few years ago. And of all the people I've met in my HR career, and there have been thousands, you always really stood out to me as somebody who approached their career with a very intentional sense of where you wanted to be. So I think there's so many professionals that sort of act like they're waiting for their career to happen to them rather than designing the career they want. What's the first mindset shift someone needs to make to, someone needs to make to take control of their career trajectory?
Yeah, it's a good question. I actually wake up many days and think the inverse. I think, wow, imposter syndrome. How did I actually get here? And at the end of the day, nothing really just happens. You actually have to, you have to choose things. You have to make decisions along the way. And so for me, and when I talk to people, one of the earliest things and most controllable things that you can do is actually make sure that you're engaged and involved in the networks of the people and the organizations and the industries within which you want to progress. And again, progress and career building means different things to different people. I think there's this historical expectation that it means bigger title, bigger team, more money, up the food chain of a pyramid in an organization, but that's not necessarily right. And when you take the time to really think about what are those roles or organizations or industries that excite you, you start to realize that there are other things that you can control, like the types of accountabilities that you have, the size of the decisioning power you have, the proximity to other decision makers. So it's really about, to me, finding those areas of interest and really honing in to make sure that you're involved. And there's a whole bunch of things we can talk about downstream, but for me, that was, I knew I loved things that changed quickly. So digital marketing transformation, the evolution of how businesses operated. And I was less concerned about the vertical. Hence, I've worked in different things like telecommunications, financial services, marketing agencies, et cetera.
So I love that, Corby. And I speak to my clients about that all the time, right? So career progression doesn't need to be vertical. It can absolutely be horizontal, especially with the market being what it is and business being so tight. The opportunity to continue to grow and expand your own skill set actually only helps you as a professional as well. But how do you know when you're just being taken advantage of? So now your job has grown and you haven't gotten any more compensation. So kind of how do you define that fine line between development and this is actually a promotion?
I like to refer to that as stuck. There's a huge swath of the workforce that is essentially stuck. And yet I don't say that with any intent of good or bad, because that's not necessarily a bad word. It really comes down to what is it that's going to personally gratify you and keep you motivated to do things. And so there is obviously a point at which you're working for other people, an organization of some sort, large, medium, small, private, public, kind of doesn't matter, where the layering of the expectations, the layering on of the accountabilities, the layering on of the seniority in terms of decision making and control of assets is just consistent. And yet maybe your title or your money isn't following suit. And there's absolutely a point at which you need to take notice of that and raise your hand. And and not in an assertive or aggressive way, but in a fair value exchange way. And if you can quantify and take a look at, 6, 12, 18 months ago, here's what my expectations were, boss or HR or leader, and here's what my general commitment back was, my time, my effort, my hours, my whatever. Oh, and by the way, here's the compensation and title. And none of the last two things have changed, but everything else has gone up. I think that's a fair conversation. And any HR or organization should be at least amenable to have that discussion.
So, Corby, how much time do you actually invest in reflecting on this stuff? Like, do you kind of pause every quarter and be like, hey, what have I done since then? Or like, how active a role should people take? I'd have to like put it on a checklist or something, or I'd completely forget to even think about it, even on my own behalf. But how much time should a person spend kind of really strategizing around this?
Yeah, I think at minimum, on a quarterly basis, I try and get members of my team or clients from my coaching practice to take a bit of an inventory of the accomplishments that they've had in the last 3 months. Like I think, 12 weeks is a pretty good amount of time to be able to still remember. I mean, sometimes I wake up, I don't remember what I had for breakfast, but to go back and take a look at the calendar and say, "Oh, wow, we had some pretty substantial deliverables." What do I do with that? Well, am I updating my LinkedIn profile? Am I adding a bullet to my resume? Am I keeping a online note so that the next time I have to talk to someone about a potential opportunity, I've got that recorded? Because we forget things. We're so busy. We've got personal lives, we've got career, we've got hobbies, I'm in a band, whatever it might be. So I do think that the quarterly reflection of successes is a good thing. I'm not so fussed on thinking within a time frame of the what's next. I think that's an individual motivation that has to happen at the individual's level. And when you truly feel, either because, Kim, as you asked earlier, there's layered on stuff that I'm like, oh, am I being taken advantage of or not? Versus I'm just bored. I'm out of my wits and I'm like, what else can I do to keep myself stimulated? That's a bit more personal. There was a CEO that I worked for who used to say, every Friday, when you leave the office and drive out of the parking lot, that's another 2% of the year that's gone by, right? 2% and 2% and 2%. And so if you put it into that frame, time goes fast. And I guess the sum of that is just don't wait too long. So I think the 3 months on the historical reflection to kind of take notice of all the things you've done and take inventory. And really, when you feel any kind of angst or any kind of fidgetiness, whatever that word might be, that's the time to start to take inventory of what's next.
Something is interesting, Corby, and something that I've learned certainly throughout my career is not everybody is interested in promotion and not everybody is looking to expand. And sometimes those are your greatest performers. So, what do you advise leaders and those wonderful performers who might be just fine? And whether that's age and stage or it's as a result of some other things maybe going on in their lives. Like, what do we do and how do we support them? Because in many cases, those are high value, high impact individuals.
This is where my blunt honesty will come out. Organizations generally suck at supporting and managing and creating pathways for that huge swath of people who are happy, who are doing good work, who are contributing, and don't necessarily want, to your point, some of the things that come with the traditional definition of bigger jobs, right? So that whole notion of managing people, well, there's a huge discussion, and I'm seeing a lot of it online right now around, should I be a generalist or should I be a specialist, right? Do I want to be that technical expert in my area? Let's take the Google Maps engineer that, as long as Google Maps are needed, you're going to get paid a ton of money. You're always going to be in demand. You might have a small hit squad and sit in the corner and get paid a lot of dough. Google knows how to pay you well, but most other organizations don't have a director to AVP to P to VP type track for a engineer of Google Maps. They want people that are going to lose a little bit about that technical expertise and become more generalists around building teams and scaling teams and getting the most out of other people. That's the way I find that most, especially Canadian and North American organizations, have structured their compensation structure, their promotional structure. It's the more people you can take on and the bigger the title. So organizations really need to think about how can they still create reward paths for individuals who are amazing contributors that doesn't necessarily require the title and the size of team path. There are some organizations that I've seen do it well, and it's mostly in the tech space or sort of newer corporate structures. The large banks, the large telcos, the utility companies, there's still a huge, huge way to go in that. And so I would just say for people who are in those industries, it's going to be a bigger challenge. It's going to be a lot of just sit and wait around and hope that you can find the right leader or the right HR support within the organization to move up at least financially and not have to have the title follow. But it's usually the newer org structures and the newer, more modern ecosystems that have figured a little bit more out about that. Yeah.
I agree. And I think in some cases where employees might be in those larger organizations, even finding opportunities to mentor somebody else, that's an opportunity to continue to, you know, maintain their current workload, but demonstrate leadership and demonstrate to the organization that they are behaving in the way that the organization in their old mindset is really expecting them to behave.
Yeah, I think sometimes people shy away or get nervous or scared by that because we have this thing in our human nature, which is about preserving ourselves and preserving our value. And so the notion of scarcity, right? If I'm a single point of failure, if I've got all the skeletons in the closet and the knowledge of the thing or the system or the how processes get done, do I really want to spend the time, to your point, showing leadership and showing commitment by mentoring and educating others? That, for many people, makes them feel vulnerable. But the reality is it actually shows your value. And in many regards, if the organization is healthy and right and thinking about doing the right things, to your point, that actually shows leadership and commitment.
And it's about organizations being able to identify and address that leadership and commitment and having a place for it. And so in an experience that I had working with a small tech firm, we actually assess leadership's performance based on the level of expertise that they were able to add to their team. We actually assess their leadership abilities based on their ability to performance manage people up or out. And really kind of taking a look at, were the people that they were hiring becoming exceptional performers within 6 months? And so taking some of that away, and I know a lot of organizations, especially larger organizations, might not be able to get there, but those are some of the keys. I agree with you. It's fantastic. Thank you.
I'm curious what you think about this, Corby. There's been a huge shift since I started my HR career. So originally it was like, if you don't stay everywhere at least 5 years, you're a loose cannon. Now it's, if you've stayed somewhere more than 2 years, you're stagnant and not keeping up with stuff, or, you know, who knows what else, lazy or whatever. Where are we really in the job market on that spectrum? Because I still hear both of those things. Like, I still have clients who are like absolute loose cannon, moves around way too much. And then I hear other clients that are like, nope, you know, that's not what we're looking for because this timing issue. So what would you tell hiring managers about that?
I saw a meme the other day, and I'm going to get this a little wrong, but it said something like, baby boomers worked for one company for 40 years. Gen X worked for 20 companies in 10 years. Gen Y work to have life experiences, and Gen Z is trying to figure out why the heck they have to work.
Yeah.
Which is essentially just a sum for saying that there is no real standard. And I think a lot of it has to do with the kind of organization and the kind of skill and the amount of time it takes in many regards to maybe be perceived of as mastering or at least getting to a certain degree in that skill. So for example, I would expect people in, let's say, advertising, marketing, digital platform technology, et cetera, to have a shorter shelf life within an existing organization because of the speed and cadence of change, even within the tools and the technologies and the way in which they have to operate. And so quite often, as organizations upgrade their platforms and invest in new technologies and start doing and trying new things, the skills have to evolve. And if you're sort of stuck in a role where you're doing something that's 2 years old, your peers and other organizations are moving ahead, it's kind of natural to jump and move and learn. And a lot of that is, I would say, expected within the leadership of that. If you're in a, let's say, a finance role, or you're building a, I don't know, some sort of mutual fund for an asset management firm, that's a long play, right? This is about really getting to know and understand and partner with as an analyst, you know, your companies that you're monitoring and tracking in the industry, just as an example, you know, those things are long-term relationships. So if you're not spending 4, 5, 6, 7 years to build up that credibility in what you're doing, I'm not sure that somebody's going to look at you as somebody that's going to help grow their business. So I do think there's a lot of variability to it. At the same time, regardless of what you do, there is absolutely still a perception in many regards to this notion of commitment, right? Promotion in role, you know, or in company, I should say, where you show progress in your ability to add accountabilities and or title, if that's, you know, what is made available to you, that does show up more so when you've got 10 or 20 resumes in front of you and you're trying to like pick who to talk to. Those things stand out, but I wouldn't say it's the most important thing.
So, Corby, I have a question for you. With over 30% of the planet's population being Generation Z, we can try to change them, but isn't it time that our processes and our thinking change to meet them where they are? And what are you kind of counseling your senior leaders that you're coaching on really learning to appreciate and develop the programs that are going to be able to pull the best out of this new generation?
So I'll start on the reverse, and I'll say there's one gentleman who I am coaching who is in the sweet spot of Gen Z and comes from a family where, you know, very high performing professionals, doctors, executives in large organizations, global organizations, and he had a pretty plum job at a pretty cool organization, and one day he's like, "I've had enough," and he quit. And he has spent the last 7 to 9 months trying to figure out what makes him tick so that he can find the next job. And so much of the battle in his head was not about the quitting. It was about how do you explain that to my parents, which is essentially the same thing in many regards as explaining it to the executives in organizations that either I left or that I'm going to ask and expect to hire me the next time. Because let's call it what it is, most organizations, the senior decision makers are not going to be of the same generation unless they started the business in the last 3 or 4 years. And so I think the first thing in talking to leaders is understanding that the expectations of what I call culture, and so culture are all of the, to me at least, culture are all of the ancillary things about the work environment outside of your compensation and the specific job you're doing. So it's the purpose of the brand. It's the location of your office. It's can I wear jeans or shorts or do I have to wear a suit every day? Do I even have to come into the office every day? What are the flexible elements of when and where and how I can work? All of these things, which are so incredibly valuable to Gen Z, right? They will make decisions on pure culture and not worry so much about the product, the function, even the compensation. The money is not the driving factor. Now, it is a little bit more than the Gen. Than the millennial, the Gen Y, but it's really about the flexibility and the freedom to get the stuff done that they need to get done in a way in which they want to get it done. And so executives need to take note of that. They need to know it can't all be in the office 5 days a week, 9 to 5, with a certain set of clothing and a certain expectation of the technology and the tools with which we will expect them to work. It will be the ability for individuals to sometimes even craft their own titles and be creative in the way that they describe the work that they're doing and write their own job descriptions. It's to me, it's really about flexibility and not holding to the traditional norms that would have attracted that baby boomer that would last 40 years. And I think that's the other key point is don't expect anybody you hire to last 40 years. You have to have an understanding of succession planning, avoiding single points of failure, having redundancy in the skill sets. Which also means when you're hiring Gen Zs, you need to make sure that they're at least hungry to learn because you need to have people that have multiple skills and that can cover off for each other, given the fact that they want the flexibility and they could drop off at any given moment.
So when you and I worked together, we were in a very large organization where there should have been infinite possibilities to move around, but lots of folks listening are probably in smaller organizations. What's their indication? Like, what are the indications they should be looking for that maybe they need to start taking this campaign externally? And a second part to that is the organization we worked in really encouraged people to leave and then come back. They were like the king of rehiring folks who went off, learned something different, and then came back. And so many organizations are so reticent to do that. Like, it's not a personal attack that they want to go learn something. So what would be your advice to organizations who are like, even know if it's nervous. Why does everyone have such a hard time with taking someone back once
The
they've gone
boomerang
off?
effect. I think to the first part of your question, my grandmother always used to say, if you don't ask, you don't get. Right. And so,
My grandmother used to say it's nice to be nice. So I
yeah,
guess it's
different. But you can ask nicely, I guess.
right?
I think the way I interpret, what she said in the workforce is nobody, and it kind of goes to the first question too about taking control of your career. Like, very rarely are you going to have such a strong advocate for you that's going to just like clear the path and shine up the yellow brick road and send you on your way, and everything will be great because you'll land at a city of emeralds with every wish you ever wanted. And so you need to actually figure out what it is you want and ask for it. You want a new title? Ask for it. You want a raise? Ask for it. You want a new accountability? Ask for it. You want to try a new thing or have a side project? Ask for it. And you'll be surprised how often you'll get some sort of positive response. And it may not be the whole thing, and it may not all be today, but it starts the dialogue and it creates an understanding and an awareness of the intent and the desire that you have. And so sitting around and waiting, you'll never know. Now, asking perpetually and not getting positive results or getting the kinds of results you want, at some point, Jennifer, is the signal that, okay, maybe I've capped out here. Maybe I've got to start putting one foot out the door and taking a look. Now, I do advise the people I work with to always be networking, which is different than having a foot out the door. Always be, as I said at the first question, engaged in the communities that you want to be engaged in. So whether it's the LinkedIn space or going to live events and conferences or other types of, social get-togethers with people that one day might have value to add to you as you can add value to them, I think you should always be engaged. But when you start to specifically ask for opportunities and not get them, then you kind of know it's time to put a foot out the door. But you have to ask. You can't assume that people are going to come to you with like, silver platters. And the only other part I'd say to that is don't ask just one person, because one person does not represent an entire organization. And so while some might be more amenable to help, others might not. So don't ever assume that one person's response is the response of the entire org. That's kind of how I'd answer that first part. Give me the second part again, because now I've like completely lost that. Like my breakfast. Oh no, I had Cinnamon Toast Crunch this morning, so I do remember my breakfast.
That I knew that was going to happen, but the idea that when somebody leaves, they're like dead to you, that you don't want
Right,
to
the boomerang.
then buy back the skills that some other very generous organization has put and invested into this person who now, for whatever reason, wants to return to your company and resume adding value. A lot of organizations just do not want to be open to that at all. What would you say to those organizations?
Yeah, so I'm not a pure believer, as many people are, to the notion that people leave or stay because of their boss. I think there's a whole lot of reasons people leave or stay. But I do believe there's three fundamental reasons I said before that people take a job. One is the compensation. Two is the function. Like, what are you doing every day? And is that what you want to do and are passionate about it? And three is that bucket of stuff I called culture. So if I had an employee on my team and they said to me, hey, like, I got this like pretty crazy opportunity. It's at this really innovative, cool startup that I've really wanted to try, that kind of an environment. They're going to give me 25% more money, sorry, and I get to sell stuff, and I've always wanted to sell stuff. That's a trifecta. And as a leader, I'd be like, take the damn job. Door's always open. Like, how would I and how could I ever hold somebody back from taking an opportunity like that? Because I'd probably do it myself. And so for me, again, maybe a bit more modern thinking leader, I'm like, go. And you know what? If we leave and part on a positive way, I'd love to take all that newfound knowledge and energy and skill set that someone else is going to pay to train you on and bring it back and modernize my business. Now, I'm not going to say every leader thinks that way. So that's the risk you take. Now, if someone comes to me and says, I got a job offer and it's for like more money, and they can't give me the reasons on the job or the culture, my advice is don't do it. Never take a job for one of the three. Always take a job for three of the three. But the reality is, it's usually two out of the three, and those change depending on your life stage. And so, as long as I feel confident as a leader that someone's leaving for the right reasons, there's no reason I would never bring them back. And I can't tell you exactly why many orgs do, other than they feel like they were let down. They feel like we put in time and effort and energy, and you screwed me over. It's just a bad way to think, especially in a market where there's only so many people with so many skills going around.
I want to talk about a little bit about the market right now. And what I'm seeing out in the market is that there's the lowest turnover than there's been in a really long time. I mean, and it's as a result of a number of factors, which we don't need to go into, but like there's the political environment, the economic environment, et cetera, et cetera. How do you know as an employee or even as a leader who has employees when it's time to go? Because I do believe that there is a point at which you're hurting yourself by staying. And grant, and definitely you're hurting the organization, right? Unhappiness is contagious. We know this. And so people sitting in roles where they naturally would have left had the conditions external to the organization been different, who are now sitting because they're too afraid to leave. What are you seeing and how are you coaching that?
It's definitely happening. There's less opportunities. So people are choosing to be comfortable, whether they actually are or not. I think companies are setting the mental stage to enable that with lines like, well, you're lucky to have a job. You know, our peers are laying people off. You should be thankful. And creating this sort of fear ecosystem that you should just sit down and do your stuff. That said, there's absolutely a time in everyone's career when they're just going to have to go somewhere else to evolve and to grow. So when I said before that I'm not so much a stickler for the definition of people leave or stay for their boss, I'm definitely more on the they will leave because they don't get an opportunity, which is usually driven as a result of their boss not necessarily being willing to help them. And so one of the things that I would recommend people do is ensure that you have a development plan and make sure that that development plan has some charted course for what the next role would look like. Now, again, the way you said, Kim, earlier, it doesn't necessarily have to be bigger in the traditional sense. It could be different. It could be horizontal. It could be a different department or a different function, but it's something that you're interested in. And getting your organization and your boss in particular to agree that here's the path. Here's the things we want to see you develop. So it could be skills. It could be, you know, soft skills, hard skills, technical skills. It could be just a little bit of time in seat. It could be mentoring others, whatever the list of stuff is, training, et cetera. When you're starting to get to that 75, 80, 90% complete on that list and you have the conversation, okay, we're getting close. Like, how do we start to set the stage? I think it's going to be pretty evident for most people whether the commitments that were made were lip service or legitimate. And when you're starting to find lip service and you're starting to realize that even though you've done all the things and it's like, well, you know what? I think we need to do this one other thing. We just 6 more months, 3 more months, you know, just give me that, give me that. And it becomes a one-way relationship of value sucking, I like to say. You kind of know you're not necessarily going to get ahead. The inverse can also be true, which is you can just be so damn lucky that in such a short time frame, you have someone in a senior position who isn't just a mentor, but is an advocate. And an advocate to me is there's a conversation in a boardroom. Someone says, we need someone to lead this new project. And that person is going to bring your name up and not even tell you that they did. That's powerful. Don't ever leave that. Don't Yeah. ever leave that. But the inverse is when you're getting lip service, it's time to stick a toe out the door.
So a lot of this conversation kind of has this tone of how do I get the organization to recognize what I'm capable of? How do I get this favor of the new title or what I'm looking for? But the truth is it's to the organization's benefit to have everyone reach their potential, unless that potential cannot be exploited within that organization. So how do you build a culture where employees actually feel empowered to kind of design their career to your benefit by showing you what they're really capable of, which isn't, you know, what they just had on their resume when they showed up at your door 3 years ago?
It's really tricky. And certain industries are bluntly really, really, really crappy at that. I spent a number of years in one vertical, and I sum my entire experience in that vertical as if you have an opinion, they don't like you, which is the exact antithesis of what you're talking about, which is if you actually show up every day with a desire to try and make things better, to do things differently in a positive way with the intent of good outcomes. Because, like, let's call it what it is. There's only three things businesses do. You try and grow like more money, more revenue, more customers. You try and find efficiencies, do everything we do faster, cheaper, better, and simpler. And we try and make people happy along the way. Our clients, our employees, our peers, our partners. You can do all three of those things. And so for me, I think, as individuals and as companies, if you can create a very simple standard measure against those three things. So what'd you do to help grow the business? What'd you do to help make things more efficient? And what'd you do to help make people happy? It normalizes the way in which things like objectives and targets are set. It gives everybody a chance to share in those because they're not all like these weird technical jargon terms that like one team has no idea what the other team's doing and they're self-monitoring. And at the end of the day, they're like, check, oh, look, I hit my objectives. It's like you did a implementation of a nano, like nobody, okay. So there's no normalization. And I think that's really an important part is like organizations are so crazy with distributed functions and accountabilities. It's hard to like weight the value contribution of a finance person to a salesperson to a software engineer to a call center agent to an executive to someone managing facilities. But they all have similar goals if you standardize the way you measure them. So I do think that that's a really strong way to think about things is what did you do in your role to help, or what can you do in your role to help grow the business? And it's okay if it's nothing. Call it out early so that's not an expectation. What did you do to help make people happy? And what did you do to help make things more efficient? So I like to sort of standardize and normalize things against those frameworks as well.
I think you just started the latest trend in performance evaluations.
Well, actually, that's a non-question. That's a good question. I'll give you my one tip on performance evaluations, which was given to me by a very, very, very senior Google executive about 5 or 6 years ago. And he happened to be on my podcast, but I've known him for years. And he gets his annual reviews down to one post-it note message. And when I say a message, like a word, two words, a phrase. And he said at the end of the day, and it's very logical, we can't for 12 months remember the 17 things we need to work on. So you go through it, you refine it down, you find some synergies, whatever. But what's the one thing that every day, every meeting, every time you open your computer, that post-it's there to remind you? And an example was he had an employee who was like, I mean, it's Google. He was like wicked smart. But his problem was, is that he kind of had to feel like he had to remind everybody about that every time he had a meeting, just the way he approached things. It was a bit of passive aggressiveness. It was like, how the hell, what do you mean you don't know that? Like kind of attitude. And so he had one word on a yellow post-it note on his computer that he opened every day. And all it said was humility. Your job this year was to not have to feel like you have to remind everybody how smart you are. They all know. And so that to me, and I use that now. I literally write a post-it note with a 1 to 3 word phrase for each of my direct reports.
Crazy. Am I right that if people went to your LinkedIn profile, they'd be able to tell the exact vertical that you were just describing, where you were like, if you have an opinion, you're not.
Yes.
Right. So be warned.
It was a one and done. So yeah, it's just an effing job. Like how serious to take all this shit. And at the end of the day, remember there's still life outside of your work.
For sure. I let lessons to live by for sure. And in addition to that, I would also add, and companies are not human. They have no capacity to care for people. So if you're expecting the company to do the right thing for you without, like you said, you got to ask, you're going to wait a long time.
So I'll be super transparent. And to Jen, your question of could people figure out the vertical? Well, that same vertical asked me and my team to report to a different department that completely made no sense. In fact, and I'm not going to say it, but if I tell everybody this still years later, and they're like, "What the hell? That makes no sense." So I feel vindicated. However, in that conversation, I said to some new managers in an orientation session, I said, I'm just going to give you guys a piece of like life advice. And the advice was very much to Kim, what you were just saying. No organization owes any individual anything. HR in that organization didn't like that very much. In fact, they tried to reprimand me for that, like quite substantially. And I asked them why. And they said, well, it was considered derogatory on the business. And I said, your business wasn't mentioned. It was a generic statement of corporations. And I actually think it's factual. And to the day I die, I will continue to repeat that because I do not put any derogatoriness in that. I actually say it as what it means in practice is that you, as an employee of a large organization or a public organization, your primary loyalty and relationships need to be with your boss, your peers, and the people that report to you. Then you go up to the broader department or division, and then you go to the overall org, because of the 5 or 20 or 30,000 people, you're never really going to interact with more than 1% of them. And yet people still take that as derogatory. And so out of all that and that lesson, which let's just say they didn't like and we agreed to part ways at some point, I came up with my one line, which is, it's just an effing job. Right? It's just an effing job. And it doesn't mean you can't be passionate. And it doesn't mean you can't be consistently trying to improve. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't go to work every day with this mentality of, I can do something better or help someone be better or make someone happy or all the things I said. But at the end of the day, have your personal stuff too. Have your hobbies, have your passion, have your family, have your life, take your trip, play your gig, go to a movie, leave in noon one day and go see a park near your office. Like, you have to have a life too. Because you owe yourself that. And that's the most important thing.
I was having this conversation actually just this week with somebody who I care quite a bit about and an executive that I work with. And my feedback was, first of all, you wake up in the morning and every single day you have a choice. You have a choice about where you go and where you spend your time. We have agency. That's not negative towards an organization, but that's about when you choose every single day to spend 8 hours, 10 hours, 6 hours, whatever it is, away from your dog, your family, you know, your exercise, your Peloton, whatever it is that you're passionate about, make sure that it's worthwhile. Because we really do have agency and we really do have the opportunity to invest our time in ways where we feel good about it. And that doesn't mean every single day, but overall, right? When you look at it overall. And another thing I also say to employees is, this CEO, in even a small organization, the CEO does care about you, but they're probably not waking up in the morning and thinking about how their decision is affecting you personally. And that's where the conversation about the fact that organizations don't have the capacity to really care about people. People care about people for sure, but decisions are made on behalf of the organization and we can't take them personally.
Fully aligned.
So, yeah.
Unfortunately, I got in trouble once for it, but it is what it is. And I still hold true to that value. So there you go.
And you're better for it, Corby, because you moved on to an, you know, opportunity where you can spread the knowledge with others.
Down that yellow brick road.
What is the one thing that you believe that small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
Ooh, and in full transparency, I have not been shown these questions prior. That's a great question. Honestly, I think small businesses, the biggest advantage they have is the ability to have much more transparency and inclusion in the conversation. And so having employees be aware of all the things going on in a more timely manner. So not waiting too long, having more, you know, I guess I'll call it a town hall or at least sort of sharing opportunities and asking them for their opinion. Because, you know, I always say, you never know where the best idea is going to come from. It's not always the CEO. Could be a call center agent, could be a line manager, could be someone working the floor, could like it. I don't know. Why am I any smarter than you? I'm not. And so be open, be honest, share, and ask people their opinions, especially in an org where you have the chance to ask almost everybody.
I love that.
So what was your first job, your first paying gig?
I had a newspaper delivery route when I was a really little kid. And then in grade 9, I worked at McDonald's and used to skip lunch from high school and walk over and get paid 2 times plus the free lunch because they used to only give you 50% off the food. And I made friends with the guy in the kitchen so I could shove 11 nuggets in a 6-pack. Would you like fries with that?
That's like a Tetris game right there.
Oh, if you worked at McDonald's in the front, you had to make friends with the guys in the kitchen because they knew how to shove all the food in and scam it around the managers. But anyway, I'll tell you about my Halloween show 1 year when I wore my McDonald's uniform on the side of the road, picking up roadkill just to start rumors. But anyway.
Wow. Okay. We don't have time to expand on that.
Happy Halloween.
Okay. What was your best job?
Ooh. So it's funny. I really loved working in ad agencies. I loved the variability and the chance to kind of do different things for different clients all the time. For me, that was very, very exciting. I spent 9 years at the same company as you, big red telecommunications firm. And at the time, I kind of thought it was like hell and torture. And looking back now, as I've matured and aged, I actually really appreciate the things that it offered me. And so that whole notion of like, if I ask, I can create my own role, the ability to self-direct your own path. I really got that out of that company. So I would say in the end, I really, looking back, I really respect and appreciated what I got at the Big Red telecommunications firm.
I love that. I have the best like reflections on working there too. I think it was great. I loved it actually. I stayed there the longest. I actually made it to 5 years at that job. That was a record other than this job, the one I have now. All right. What was your biggest mess up career wise, let's say, cause you're the career building expert.
I would say, and it's kind of the antithesis of how I want to be, but I was too honest. I was who I am. And it just wasn't a culture fit with the company I've mentioned a few times here without saying their name. But, you know, I think you really need to understand your environment and the people you're working with. And sometimes if you're able to be a bit more of a chameleon and adapt and see if you can be happy while you're adapting. And if you can't, then you move on. And that's another one of those, you know, Kim points of time when you can kind of identify it's time to put your foot out the door. I wear everything on my sleeve. And so for me, I am who I am. And it just meant for me, I picked the wrong vertical at the end of the day. I picked a place that didn't really want to truly innovate and do things differently. And I thought they did.
Cool. All right. What's the best learning you've ever had?
A former boss of mine, I would say, gave me some really wise wisdom on two fronts. One we've talked about was he sat me down and he said, okay, you're at this point in your career where you need to make a bit more of a conscious choice. And that choice is back to that discussion we had earlier around, do you want to maintain being that technical expert in the market where everybody comes to you and knows like you're the person for this thing? And as long as this thing is relevant and important, like you're going to be in demand and you're going to be on stage and you're going to be presenting and so on and so on. Or because these large orgs really love the sort of scaled leader, are you willing to relinquish some of that limelight and step aside and build others within that space and become more of a scaled leader where at least it'll be easier for me, your boss, to elevate you, promote you, and get you bigger jobs. But it also comes with its own fraught risk because now you're one of, you know, a whole bunch of people when it comes time to saying, well, who's the next best person to lead a different team? And if they don't see the adaptability. So that was the first thing, giving me the conscious of opportunity to have that decision and discussion. And then the second part that he said to me was always take a job that gets you closer in proximity to the decision maker, whether that's the CEO or otherwise. And that in and of itself is worth money. So in that triad of decisions I said before of job, culture, and comp, some comp is worth giving up if it means your impact is going to feel stronger to you, because you will always make the money back if you're happy and you know you're making an impact.
Cool. I love that. That's good stuff. All right. Your quickest quit.
I had a VP job over COVID that I took under a bit of duress because my opinion-oriented 3-year stint wasn't going to work out and the world was falling apart. I had no idea what was happening. And I took a job that on paper as a VP of digital looked pretty good. And I shouldn't say much more other than it was the biggest mistake of my career for a whole bunch of reasons. And mostly for what the business did and me having just couldn't really swallow the business model. We'll leave it at that little ethical opinion. And then two, it wasn't gambling. And then two, that was the one time that I encountered a leader that I just knew I was not going to get along with.
So how long did you last?
I knew 6 weeks in I shouldn't be there. And I lasted about 9 months.
Wow. That's stressful.
It was pretty bad. Like I had it physically ailed.
That's too bad. So even an expert can make a mistake every so often. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, and mistake equals learning of early warning signs for next time, right? I'll say this. I ask people all the time, can you define the perfect job? And the answer is no, because you haven't even experienced 97% of what's out there. But what you can do is you can create the non-starter list, right? So what are the things that you absolutely will say no if an opportunity comes in? Is it that I can't wear jeans to the office? Is that it's a minimum salary level? Is that it's a commute? It doesn't matter. But at least it gets you starting to filter the kinds of things that you're willing to think about and willing to immediately cut off the list without being enamored by a little nugget downstream. You got to know what you don't want in order to figure out what you do want.
Yeah, that's important clarity. So huge, actually. Really think about that.
Corby, thanks so much for spending time with us today. Where can our audience find you to get in touch about potential coaching opportunities or just get your perspective on some of the items that we chatted about today?
Yeah, so I've got my website, which is at corbyfine.com. So that's corbyfine.com. My email is corby@corbyfine.com, just because it's easy. And I'm obviously on LinkedIn for anybody that wants to reach out and connect. I think I'm the only Corby Fine on LinkedIn that I've seen. So there you go. That's my one claim to fame, the only Corby Fine on LinkedIn.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.